morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone puts out a bounty for Sunday's escaped gunmen.
The Sierra Leone police issued a very clear statement offering bounties for any information leading to the arrest and successful prosecution of the assailant.
Israel and Hamas have agreed to a two-day ceasefire extension to include the release of more hostages, a call for transparency as Malawi agrees to send workers to Israel. The UNAIDS agency releases a new report today, Tuesday, ahead of Friday's World AIDS Day, highlighting the role of communities.
It is communities and their leadership who waged those battles in the 90s and in the 2000s to break pharma monopoly on the treatment and make it reach everybody.
And Zambia becomes the sixth African country to launch Starlink satellite internet services. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The government of Sierra Leone has announced a 50,000 leon, about $2,380 award, $380 award for information on the whereabouts of the gunmen who attacked a military armory in the capital Freetown on Sunday. The government has also offered a 10,000 leons, about $480 for information on any of the prison escapees. This, as Reuters reports that 20 people were killed and nearly 2,000 inmates escaped during Sunday's attack on a military armory. In a Sunday night speech, President Julius Maada Bio said most of the leaders of the attack had been arrested and detained and that calm had returned to the city. Information Minister Chernah Bah tells me that the government has reasonable intelligence from cooperative citizens on the whereabouts of the at-large attackers and prison escapees.
Most of the attackers, the leaders of these attackers, have been captured. They are helping the police with investigations. The ones that we have not managed yet to hold in detention, we have reasonable intelligence on their whereabouts. They have been surrounded in the hills of our city. We're very confident that very soon, each and every one of them will not just be apprehended, but brought to face the full force of the laws of Sierra Leone. Our president yesterday in his speech made clear that we will follow the law, that we will maintain the security of our states, and we will continue to push to strengthen our democracy and advance development in our country. That's the focus of the government of Sierra Leone, and that's what we'll continue to do.
Did you offer any bounty for information or capture of any of the people who are still at large?
Yes, we did. The Sierra Leone police issued a very clear statement offering bounties for any information leading to the arrest and successful prosecution of the assailant, and any information as well that will help us to reapprehend those who are serving criminal sentences who have been illegally released from our detention facilities. But I should add that many of these inmates are in the process of turning themselves back in. A number of them voluntarily, even prior to our press release, turned themselves into police stations across the city, saying that we were not part of this heinous attacks on these prisons and on the peaceful citizens of our country, and we want to make sure that we are law-abiding. We applaud those, and they have been applauded in the Sierra Leone police press release. And now we're working with the citizens of our country to find those who orchestrated and executed these attacks and bring them to justice.
What can you tell us about the curfew?
So the indefinite curfew that was announced yesterday was effectively ended at 6 a.m. this morning. What we have now, which will come into effect at 9 p.m., is a new curfew. So that curfew starts from 9 p.m. and ends every morning at 6 a.m. so people can go about their normal business.
Minister, should Sierra Leoneans be concerned about what happened on Sunday?
His Excellency the President, who is the Commander-in-Chief, has assured the people of our country that the situation is fully under control, that those who tried to execute this have indeed failed. Whatever their intentions were, they have failed, and we're strengthening our security situation across the country. But should any and every citizen be vigilant? Absolutely. We should understand that the peace stability and democracy that we enjoy cannot be taken for granted, that we have individuals who are capable of planning and executing attacks that could undermine all of the things we cherish in our society. And this is why our president called for unity and called for political leaders, traditional leaders, and civil society to come together to reaffirm our commitments to peace, to unity, and to the defense of our cherished democracy, imperfect as it may be. But we have to continue to utilize nonviolent means to resolve the differences that we may have.
Chairman Abad, Sierra Leone's Information Minister, he was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. The Executive Director of the United Nations AIDS Agency, UNAIDS, says while today's global challenges are important, the international community should not drop the ball on the fight to end the HIV/AIDS pandemic. Winnie Byanyeman says the fight against AIDS is one of the success stories in the international cooperation. Ahead of World AIDS Day this Friday, December 1st, UNAIDS will launch a report today, Tuesday, in London entitled Let Community Lead. Byanyeman tells me that communities are on the front lines of progress in the fight against HIV/AIDS and deserve continued funding.
World AIDS Day is coming. It will be on the 1st of December. And on that day, we have a message for the world. But first, we acknowledge the devastation that is happening in the world today, the war in Ukraine, the war in Gaza, and other wars. And what I want to say to the world on World AIDS Day is that even though it is so bleak out there, the United Nations member states are failing to end these crises, that there is one crisis, the HIV/AIDS pandemic, where the United Nations brought together the governments of the world. They stood in solidarity. They have been fighting this disease, and there is success. We are a success story of the United Nations of member states. Why do I say that? I remind the world that even though today we still don't have a cure and a vaccine for HIV, that we have 30 million people now who have access to treatment and they are living good lives. The other side of the coin is that there's still another 9 million out there whom we must find and get on treatment too. The third point we say on this World AIDS Day, we've chosen the theme of the role of communities being recognized and supported. Let communities lead. And why do we say that?
I wanted to ask you, so what are some of the ways that the communities are leading?
It is communities and their leadership who waged those battles in the 90s and in the 2000s, from South Africa to Thailand to Brazil, to break pharma monopoly on the treatment and make it reach everybody. It is communities that brought the price down from $25,000 per person in 1995, down now to about $70 per person per year. It's communities who have been fighting and getting these horrible laws that criminalize people for who they love and who they are, and pave the way for people to access what they need. Communities monitor how governments deliver and make demands for better services. Don't get in the way of communities. Don't shrink the civic space for communities to work. Free the space for them. They are partners to government. They are not enemies.
As you mentioned earlier, Winnie, World AIDS Day is December 1st, this Friday. Can you briefly just tell us where we are or where does Africa stand in the global effort to end HIV/AIDS?
Absolutely. Last year, 2022, 630,000 people died of AIDS-related illnesses, and 1.3 million people were newly infected. The majority of these new infections, the majority of these deaths were in Africa. We know that women and girls are still disproportionately affected This is the case in sub-Saharan Africa. HIV, AIDS, new infections are the face of a girl in Africa. That's a sad thing. We also know that criminal laws against LGBTQ people are driving LGBT people underground. They are more highly vulnerable to infections and to deaths than the rest of the population. We need to repeal those laws. The Ugandan law, the Anti-Homosexuality Act, was moving the country in the wrong direction.
Winnie Biayima is the executive director of the United Nations AIDS Agency units. She spoke with us from London. Israel and Hamas have agreed to a two-day ceasefire extension on Monday that is to include the release of more captives, according to mediator in Qatar. Hamas has released dozens of children in a four-day ceasefire, and Israel has released Palestinian prisoners. The extension has given Israelis hope that more people still in captivity, including children, could be freed. Linda Gristin reports from Jerusalem.
It seemed an entire nation held its breath while waiting for Hamas to free the Israeli children it held hostage. Many Israelis cried as they watched each hostage release over the past few days. On Monday, mediator Qatar announced that Israel and Hamas agreed to extend a ceasefire for two more days, raising hopes among Israelis that more people, including children that Hamas had taken hostage on October 7th, would be released. Ohad Mundar, a thin boy who likes to play with Rubik's Cubes, turned nine while being held captive by Hamas with his mother, Karen. He was reunited with his father in the hospital. His cousin, Mehrav Raviv, says that Ohad has lost weight but seems healthy and happy to belatedly celebrate his ninth birthday with his friends at the hospital.
But they were talking and laughing and like normal kids. It wasn't that easy for him, but Karen said that he behaved very nice. There were a time that he was crying. And also when he came back, I mean, the tears, when he saw a sensitive movie or something that someone told him something. So it was emotional, but I hope he will get back to normal as soon as possible.
Israel says Hamas captured 40 children out of a total of 240 hostages. An official from Qatar said that 10 of the children are under the control of other militant groups and that it is not clear if Hamas can find them. The freed children will have to work through the trauma of their ordeal, psychiatrists say. Some, like 4-year-old Abigail Idan, saw their parents killed. Her father was holding her when a Hamas militant shot him.
The condition is not normal. There are different reactions. One will cry, another will speak about different things. One will wet his bed, another will be afraid to go out from the safe room because that's the only safe place, or another won't agree to go into the safe room because the memories of the safe room are the memories of death and danger.
As part of the ceasefire deal, Israel released three Palestinian prisoners, all women or minors, for every hostage who was freed. Among the released prisoners was Fatima Shaheen, convicted of trying to stab an Israeli settler.
We are happy that she was released,
but only slightly so, because we cannot ignore the dire conditions in Gaza, where thousands have been killed. It is not suitable for us to be happy at this time.
The Israeli families say that the reunions with their children released from Hamas captivity are bittersweet because there are still so many remaining hostages. They say they will not rest until every family is reunited. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
In Malawi, civil society groups, including the Center for Democracy and Economic Development Initiatives, is calling for more transparency from the government when it comes to giving information to the public. Sylvester Namiwa says public officials appear to be secretive regarding a recent agreement with Israel. He is now calling on public officials who, he says, failed to disclose the accord to apologize for their actions. This after local media reports say a government agreement enabled 221 young Malawians to travel to work on farms in Israel. It comes as Israel gave $60 million to help efforts by the administration in Lilongwe to jumpstart the economy. For more about calls for transparency and accountability, VOA's Peter Clotty reached Sylvester Namiwa.
This gives a clear picture that these two public officials who are supposed to work on trust, they are conflicted. And this compromises their position to say next time when they make a position, it will be difficult to believe them because Malawians saw for themselves their own people, brothers and sisters and sons, taking off, living for Israel. Now, in order for these people to continue serving in such positions and in order to continue to have the trust of the people, they are supposed to apologize. Secondly, there is total secrecy surrounding this deal. This is why we are challenging government, first of all, to come out in the open and tell Malawians the criteria used to identify the beneficiaries.
Does it really matter who the beneficiaries are? You always complain that Malawians are poor. If the government has made effort for Malawians to travel to Israel to go and work, and you know there will be so many dependents on these people who are going to work and bring foreign exchange to boost Malawi's economy, what is the problem here?
In a democratic dispensation like Malawi, issues of transparency and accountability are of paramount importance. Therefore, since in Malawi, issues of unemployment have reached a crisis proportions, it is only fair that if there are opportunities, they have to be a modality that every Malawian should seize to benefit from that opportunity.
What do you say to government experts who are of the view that it is not every deal the government signs that is made public? In certain instances, government officials are sworn to secrecy. So it's not everything that goes out to the public, you know?
Secrecy, not with employment. The government is supposed to create equal opportunities for all, as clearly stipulated in the Section 20 of the Republican Constitution that discourages discrimination. So the same government should be in the forefront violating its own constitution. This is why we demand that information should be made public. Secondly, the government should justify, because as I'm talking to you now, it is struggling to repatriate Malawians that are trapped in Oman. Now, what justification, what evidence is there that our people are going to work in a safe environment? Because what is happening in Oman started exactly like this.
The government has issued a communique explaining its position with regard to these Malawians who are going to Israel to go and work. Why is that a problem to you? The explanation has been made.
That's where the problem is starting from. That statement is conflicting what the leader of the House said. It is conflicting what the Speaker of Parliament said. But most importantly, it has come too little, too late when the damage has already been done. It is said that when authorities cling to information, the citizenry will get information from undesirable sources. But if you go back to the same statement you are referring to, it is not clearly spelling out the welfare of our people. Because, like alluded to, we have got people that are trapped in slavery in Oman. Now, this is why we want the government to come out in the open with proof of evidence that our people are not going into slavery. Secondly, they should tell us the criteria. They should explain the criteria used to identify the beneficiaries. Thirdly, they should explain why this sudden speed because of this Israel deal, as opposed to our nurses, trained nurses and medical personnel that have pleaded with government for over a decade now to be allowed to work elsewhere in the world and get opportunities. We demand answers on this one.
Sylvester Namiwa is the Executive Director of the Center for Democracy and Economic Development Initiatives in Malawi. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 28th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Zambia has become the sixth country in Africa to launch Starlink satellite internet services. The goal is to provide Zambians with faster, reliable, uncapped internet access. But it's not clear if the service is cheap enough to bridge the digital divide. Kathy Short has this report from Lusaka, Zambia.
Residents in Chongwe, a rural town in Zambia, don't have reliable internet, but that is expected to change with Zambia's launch of Starlink satellite internet services. Operated by American aerospace company SpaceX, Starlink uses a network of low Earth orbit satellites to provide high-speed broadband. Marius Van Furen is the country manager at Piratas Zambia, the authorized reseller of the business service for Starlink.
That will enable rural remote schools that do not have access to electronic content, electronic educational equipment, to access content very cheaply, and it will definitely bridge the gap in the digital divide.
According to recent media reports, the initial Starlink hardware cost for its internet access is about $500, while monthly fees are pegged at $37 for the most cost-effective package. But most general workers in both urban and rural Zambia earn a minimum of $50 to $100 a month, according to the country's new minimum wage approved by the government. Sam Tembo, a cleaner in Lusaka, earns $150 a month.
Starlink internet is here, but it's expensive for me. I can't afford. I'd rather use that money. Instead of paying internet, I buy food.
But Sandy Chimpala, who runs a news blog focusing on technology, says Starlink will be a big help for some companies.
In Zambia, I think the opportunities lie in areas like telemedicine, in e-learning, e-commerce, also startups and entrepreneurs who need to connect, obviously, for their businesses now going online. There's also an opportunity in e-governance as well, so services that need to reach the marginalized or people who are in far-flung areas.
Kasali Msenge is with Smart Zambia, a government agency that works on infrastructure for information, communication and technology.
Connectivity cuts across sectors, but in particular in our case in Zambia, the hope is to bridge the gap and to allow us to leapfrog and catch up with advanced economies out there.
According to the World Bank 2020 report on accelerating digital transformation in Zambia, only 44% of Zambians have internet access, and those who do usually face slow, intermittent, and high costs. Experts say Starlink could help bridge the digital divide and provide millions of Zambians with high-speed internet for the first time, although the cost of the startup hardware is still high for the majority of Zambians. Kathy Short for VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
A senior international criminal court prosecutor on Monday announced that she was dropping all further investigations into crimes committed in Kenya related to violence that erupted following elections in 2007. The decision by the ICC's deputy chief prosecutor, Nazar Shamir Khan, ends a 13-year legal saga which involved senior Kenyan politicians. In 2010, the Hague-based tribunal started probing post-election fighting in the Eastern African nation, in which prosecutors said 1,300 people died and some 600,000 others were left homeless. Initially, six suspects faced charges of crimes against humanity, including murder and deportation. The suspects include former and current Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and William Ruto. And that's it for this Tuesday, November 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube. which you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botting, Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.